Brimstone.com Saturdays, midnight to 2 a.m. Eastern Time.
Let the magic rise.
Bring your ideas, bring your voice, 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 time for the new American Dream Radio Show. The American Russian novel, all we need is more vodka radio hour. We have the wind of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, the tortured tundra. What we must have is a new American dream. Where we're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream, not homes and toasters, but becoming the type of country we always thought we were. A new America, the real hope of the world. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the stem of our maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your head and hands with a warm drink and listen. For the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And as usual, I'm going to open up with a song. Trailers for sailor rent, room to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, about 2 hours of pushing broom, by the 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. Third boxcar midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine. Old worn out suits and shoes, I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies I have found, short but not too big around. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. I know every engineer on every train, all their children, all their names, every handout in every town, every lock that ain't locked when no one's around. I sing trailers for sailor rent, room to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets. I ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom, by the 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. All right. So once again, welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show, and I'm going to introduce my first guest, Sheena Powell-Zuri, who I believe is already on here with me. So, Sheena, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hello, Chuck. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing real well. How about you?
Great, thank you. What a peppy song. But for me, instead of vodka radio hour, as mentioned before your song, it's a Pinot Noir radio hour for me.
Oh, well, okay. Well, mine's actually with a Bloody Mary, so...
But that's best for brunch.
I think of that as a daytime drink.
I know.
But in any case, you got to go with what you have in the house sometimes.
For many years, I did not drink alcohol. As part of living a healthy lifestyle, but I realized that I really enjoy the flavor, the nuances of a really good wine, or a really well-crafted beer, or a really nice spirit or cocktail.
Yeah.
So I've grown to appreciate that different level coming back to it.
Well, good.
But thank you for having me on the New American Dream Radio Show broadcast from Revolution Radio. Revolution has a new meaning for all of us this week. And there's so much that has happened in the month between my last podcast with you and today. We have just witnessed the selection of Kamala Harris as Joe Biden's running mate in the 2020 race for the presidency of the United States of America. Isn't that incredible? But not since Shirley Chisholm in the 70s has a woman of color come so close to being elected to such a high position of responsibility and authority in the U.S. Last month, I talked about the approaching centennial of the 19th Amendment, August 18th, which is the ratification of the rights for women to vote. And August 18th is also the day of the Florida primary elections. It's such a milestone, such a significant day, and very meaningful for all of us thinking about how Kamala Harris was selected by Biden's running mate to be voted on at a convention in a few weeks. women suffered movement was a hard battle, and even while women were granted the right to vote in 1965, it still astonishes me how it is in our living history that women were finally given a voice in U.S. politics, which affected their families and their professional presence in the workforce. I feel very proud that Kamala Harris chose, but I still feel we in the U.S. are way behind the rest of the world with this cultural shift. We are, the United States, supposed to be the beacon of democracy, the example by which all other countries learn and grow. We set the bar very high, or we used to. Now I fear we fall far behind many other nations like Germany and New Zealand with women in leadership in terms of respecting a woman's voice. Don't you think, Chuck?
I think we're behind in many areas these days, which is very sad. And that certainly is one of them, yes.
And it's just the calm before the storm. Kamala Harris is already being attacked as nasty and horrible, among other slurs. This rings sexist to me, and our president is leading that charge of misogynistic oppression, and it's insulting, believe me. Biden and Harris are taking seriously undoing all the damage that Trump has inflicted on our democracy. Let alone our young girls and boys taught that they're not equal. It can be disheartening, but this battle, I feel, is just heating up. Women fought to be heard at Seneca Falls in 1898 at the Seneca Falls Convention, where activists had been fighting for years before for the right to vote, but the convention was a turning point. The delegates at the Seneca Falls Convention agreed that American women were autonomous individuals who deserved their own political identities. The idea of voting rights for women was wholly mocked in the press. It wasn't a part of culture. It wasn't a part of their norm. But Elizabeth Stanton and Maud, her partner in this movement, joined later by Susan Anthony and many others, forged a path for voting rights that I have been able to, by constitutional rights, exercise all my life. I've never known not being able to vote, in my opinion. But now I feel that we're at an inflection point. And here we are. August 18th is approaching. And there is so much to be grateful for and so much to take seriously. All the hard work of women being challenged and minimized with our current sitting president's egregious disregard for that work and trying to undermine our election before they're even done with. So there's a storm coming. I feel its waves are blue. It's Democrat blue. But we may disagree with politics, but I feel at this point we are beyond politics. It is imperative to first protect our democracy, protect our system of voting, protect the rights of our citizens, including women, and especially women at this time vote. We need to protect all of these rights before we can even start to express our differences again as a Republican or Democrat. So to me, this election is a sort of existential crisis. So this is something that I feel we all have a responsibility to, regardless of what you think about how to approach some issue as Americans, and it's so appropriate to speak in this new American dream context, right? There should be a baseline where we all have these ideals. It's not okay to be racist. It's not okay to keep women's voices from being heard. But what comes into play are the differences in politics and how we manage those things. We all have to agree that it's not okay to put your foot on a man's neck and kill him. It's not okay to target people of color. To inspire such behavior. We should all agree on that basic point. And being a Republican or being a Democrat or being with another political party comes in how we're going to manage that, how we're going to achieve that, and ensure that we keep these very high ideals. And I fear that. In the past four years, our high ideals that we try so hard to protect and improve upon, we're growing as a nation. I mentioned the civil rights movement earlier, very briefly, but we've grown so much as a nation. We make mistakes and we learn from them, just like we're individuals, just like people, just like human beings are fallible. So our forefathers didn't have it all laid out perfectly. They didn't have all the answers, but they had an ideal, had a dream of what this new place should stand for. And that's what we really need to keep true to.
Well, you know, Sheena, I think that You have to go back a little farther than that.
Probably.
It's been a steady erosion of the ideals and the system that's in place to protect them. I think it goes back at least to the beginning of this century, and maybe even a bit farther. Maybe back to, say, Reagan or somewhere around there. There's been a continual attack on the way government works, a strengthening of the executive branch. And, what we have right now is just the culmination of a long process. When we put Trump into office, if it hadn't been Trump, it would have been somebody else like him.
Right.
So he's just a representation, or a manifestation, or a personification,
or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
It's very difficult to personally wrap my head around how things are going. I, as you know, I am a scientist. I'm trained to think in a very logical manner and apply scientific method to things. I want to see evidence. I like to process things very methodically, and I like to get different information and based on the different information, maybe change my mind. I'm always open to that, and I am encountering many people who are just so rigid in their thoughts that they aren't willing to have their mind changed, or are so willing to believe a conspiracy theory without delving into the evidence and just repeating something that resonates with them on some level.
Yeah.
So this is very broken, and it can be maddening, and the conversations that we should be having with friends and family are eroding the relationships itself. And I think that's a tragedy. So I hope that we can, as a democratic society, and also on a very personal micro level, heal ourselves in this process, make our voice heard, and keep talking and keep the dialogue open. Which is why I really appreciate to be a part of this project with you, with New Dream. And sometimes with all the madness happening in the world, it is very important to step away from it. Turn off the phone, turn off the laptop, turn off the tablet, and pick up a book, read something, write. And I have a new project that I'm working on, and it's called Titles. very cozy library, and I was looking at my bookshelf one day for inspiration and something to just escape from the news and being obsessed with what's happening in the world, with what's happening with coronavirus and George Floyd, and wanting so bad to support the Black Lives Matter movement, not understanding why people don't feel the way I do. This overall confusion, I think many people feel this way, but in looking at my bookshelf, I was inspired by the titles of my books, that there's so many different subjects, so many different genres. I decided to create a collection of poetry called Titles. So instead of writing a poem and then finding a title and later on trying to put together a collection of this poem, I'm starting the process backwards. I'm starting the process with a blank book, and I created a table of contents using the titles of select books on my own bookshelf. as titled poems. So I'm filling this blank book with poems starting with the title. And it's proven to be a great nourishment for my soul. Like a part of the healing process to allow me to escape. And one of the poems I wrote is called The Raven and 30 Other Poems. And it's inspired by Edgar Allan Poe's collection, The Raven and 30 Other Poems. So I would very much like to share this as part of the project.
I would love to hear it.
Okay. So this, to give you a little background, this is based on a friend of mine, one rainy night we were sitting around talking, having a nice glass of wine, a group of friends, and he decided to pull a book off the shelf, and he read The Raven from the book, and we were all very excited on hearing the poem, enjoying the silence and the mix of the rain outside, a really beautiful moment many years ago. So the title of the book, which was on my shelf, gave birth, reminded me of that moment in my life, and I created this poem from that. The Raven and 30 Other Poems. One dreary rainy evening, Tony sat and read a poem. The Raven heeded, quoth, his voice a dulcet low. He cradled 30 poems, its spine in his left hand. While fingertip aptly pressed the space where eyes did land. Through respect he cocked and peered as we sat around in awe. Quoth the raven, nevermore, we could almost hear its caw. While meandering through the story, lightning and thunderous roar, fixed us to the poem's page where we met Lenore. The tapping code pen came to life with the rain. Tappity tap 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 on the window pane. The velvet crushed beneath me as I leaned to the story more. The twilight came, the rain stopped, her perfume petrichor. The flapping crack fire accented word or word. We were taken by the hypnotist, a black haunting bird. And that's the Raven 30 Other Poems.
All right. Well, I love that poem, and I really like the concept that you're working with for this new book. Sometimes we need to shake up our methods or our process, and right. I think it's great that you're trying a different approach to writing.
Yes, and we can also use creative projects to escape from the world. This is a way of diverting your mind. From something that is unpleasant to something that is pleasant, and lifting the spirit. And I think in this time we're all in self-imposed quarantine, staying home, and have so many restrictions with relating people, friends, family, going to work. It's very difficult. So these creative outlets will really help us. So I would encourage everyone to do that. Just disconnect. Find happiness within. It's not going to a bar. It's not even being with friends or being with family or all that. Although we may miss that. The happiness is right here in ourselves. So if we can just step away from the madness of the world for a moment, we can realize that, find our happiness.
I'm not sure I would use the word escape for this, but because I think of it more as finding new ways to explain the world to ourselves and finding new ways to understand the world and our place in it.
Mm-hmm. maybe make sense of things.
Yes, exactly.
Or be able to approach it with some objectivity. Yes. Because what we see out in the world may not directly affect us. Maybe in policy, or if we have a leader that's not to our ideals. But truly, what affects us is right here in our space. So we have still quite a bit of control over that.
Exactly. I really think the way towards happiness is to find happiness where you are and with what you have, rather than to be forever seeking more money, more power, more possessions, or something more from other people, because we have to look within ourselves and our own lives, and then we can. I'm happy most of the time. There are a lot of things wrong, but you know that I'm not going to let that make me a sad person or an angry person.
No, it can't. And to your point, we are often looking, we spend so much time looking for something when what we need to be happy is right in front of us. And right in our moment, what you said reminded me of this Oliver Stone movie, Any Given Sunday, where Al Pacino gives a great monologue to inspire his football team to go out there on the football field and score the goal, be a team. But sports is really a metaphor for life, right?
And he says something about that's what living is, six inches in front of your face every game or minute or second. That's what living is, it's six inches in front of your face.
So pay attention, and I love that. Thank you so much, Tina, for us to close. Thank you so much, Tina, I always enjoy visiting with you. Thanks for being on the show. We'll be right back.
Listener-supported talk radio station floods itself on the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Stars Ouija Network. You will encounter
topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at RevolutionRadio.com, Saturdays, midnight, 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
There's no secret in the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why the story behind the story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
All right, thanks for listening to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on a great network, the Revolution Radio Network at freedomslips.com. And this second segment of the show always features Philip Ferrugio, who joins us from Port Orange, Florida. And I'm going to add Philip into the show right now. His website.
Hey,
Philip! All right. Well, I was just about to tell the folks about the website. It's The Empire, Stupid, where they can find a lot of your interviews and your writings. And hey, let's go right into I want to hear what kind of a column you have for us tonight.
Well, I wrote a column in observance of October 12, 2017, and this is what I wrote. It's called Blood and Soil. In the 1970 film Patton, about General George Patton, we see a scene where two battle-worn soldiers marching along the road, passed by a jeep carrying General Patton. One guy looks and then he says,
There goes old blood and guts.
And the other soldier smirks and answers, our blood, his guts. Well, so it is for the rich, rather popularizing and subsidizing to some extent this far-right wing neo-fascist, maybe even a neo-Nazi white supremacist movement for perhaps generations. Supposed mainstream electronic print media owned by the aforementioned super rich, along with their countless think tanks, that's quite an oxymoron, have given backhanded license to such a horrific mindset. It only seems to get worse whenever the suckers elect politicians that do the bidding of these bastards. The celebrated and phony populist demagogue now running the show. He has to suck up himself to the same super rich handlers of empire that the other residents of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue have done, going back probably decades. Please note, the last guy who stopped doing that left Dallas in a box. So here it is, three years and one day or two days since another nail was driven into the coffin of Republican democracy. The Charlottesville white supremacist march of October 12th, 2017, with little news of the anniversary.
October 12, 2020 will be remembered,
and I would say way over-reported, as the day that Kamala Harris was picked to run with
Lunchbox Joe, a.k.a. Sleepy Joe, a.k.a. the Ukraine made me my son Rich Biden. The tragic and most important never forget event in Charlottesville on that weekend of April 20th, should have been the major news story that was there yesterday. The video of that group of mostly male white men holding torches and repeating blood and soil, and Jews will not replace us, nearby a prestigious college campus where many of the men were probably students, should be played over and over again. Matter of fact, the stupid Democratic Party should have been using that video and following comments by the president.
There are many fine people on both sides.
As one of their main 30-second commercials to help dump Trump.
Why haven't they?
Where are the Jewish people within his disgraceful administration speaking out
or actually resigning?
Where were all those Israeli hypocrites running that country showing outrage?
Meek of that famous answer by newly elected Barack Obama when asked why his administration was not pursuing investigations into the run-up to our illegal and immoral attack and occupation of Iraq.
He basically danced around it all by stating that it was time to look forward and not back. Thus letting the lying, deceitful, and murderous Bush-Cheney cabal off the hook for their war crimes.
And war crimes they were.
Being a baby boomer, I lived through that duck cover A-bomb drill in the 1950s.
I experienced genuine fear during the fallout shelter pandemonium of the early 60s,
and of course the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis when Catholics went nightly to Venus at our church to pray for peace.
We were scared, so shitless.
Then I had to live through the Vietnam debacle, which was a moneymaker for corporate America, seeing young men like myself returning from the shit, as they called it, in a box.
To be drafted in the mid-to-late 60s was a one-way ticket into a zone of death for both Americans and Vietnamese.
For what? Many of my peers
who had to go there had asked.
For what?
Yet the greatest sadness for me was that eventful day, March 19th, 2003.
Having a sleepless night before, when only Canadian television presented a more balanced report of what was going to take place, I awoke to have breakfast.
I remember that I stood for some reason far from the television set as I watched the coverage of what Secretary of Defense labeled as shock and awe.
I cried.
Just standing there is a wonderful flow to my eyes.
Just like when I told my dad a few years ago that his wife of 64 years was now dead.
And how it stampeded his tear ducts.
Watching those marches, right out of 1930's Germany on August 2nd, 2017,
complete with similar mantra and accompanying equipment, was too difficult to digest.
This was 21st century America,
or shall I say,
America with K.
Those foolish followers of Hitler shouted blood and soil.
Many of them were not a participant.
Well, so it is for these new minions of the super rich.
What both those stormtroopers of 90 years ago and this new breed of lemmings should be saying is, our blood and their soil.
As to who really calls the shots of their actions.
Sure as hell ain't the Jews.
Because very few of them are allowed into that club.
Thank you.
Very thoughtful segment, Philip.
Okay, lay it on me. Come on.
It's hard to know how to respond. I mean, it's...
Well, you're around the same age as me, so do you have any remembrance of back when you were a young boy? With the duck cover and fallout shelters and the Cuban Missile Crisis?
You bet. Yep.
Okay, tell me how you felt after that was all through, everyone went through all of that.
I guess I kind of halfway believed it might make a difference, but not that much because, you know, I read about, you know, what, you know, a nuclear bomb could really do, and I could see these fallout shelters weren't really going to, you know, help much. But
I feel during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Scared?
I mean, you were about 10 years old, right, weren't you?
That sounds about right.
10 or 9?
Yeah.
It was a frightening time for all of us who experienced it. And we didn't know a lot about what was going on. We only knew what the newspapers were telling us, basically, behind the scenes. That great movie, did you ever see that movie, 13 Days? Did you ever hear that movie?
I'm not sure I've seen that one, no.
It's a great movie. It's about the 13 days of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Everyone should watch it. I've watched it five times. It's fantastic. It really shows you what was going on with Kennedy and his administration, what they were dealing with, the whole thing with the Russians. It's a fascinating film.
What time of year was that again?
October.
That was in October? Okay.
Yeah. I think it was October 22nd, to be exact. That was the main thrust of it. I think it was around the 22nd.
Yeah, so, I was in Cincinnati. I don't know. I mean,
You were playing for the Red Legs. But anyway, it was a very trying time, and I think what we're going through now with the pandemic is in a different angle. It's the same anxiety. That we felt then during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Then it was about a war that could destroy the whole earth. And now it's about a virus that could destroy many lives.
And the economy.
It's kind of sad, really, that Charlottesville thing really affected me. That's why I had to write this thing.
Yeah, I know. It was terrible. It was terrible.
I mean, to have those young people shouting, carrying those torches, if anyone studies history, they realize where the people that organized this thing got it from.
They took it from Germany, 1930. Right. Well, you figure it worked once, you know, they want to use that technique again.
To me, it's really, it is. And I'm saying this because I'm 8% Jewish, okay? And you know, I was raised in Brooklyn, New York, where half of my friends were all Jewish. I used to make a joke, I said that I went to one bar mitzvah and then a rabbi. And to see the President of the United States make those remarks afterwards and not see outrage by everyone, not just Jewish people, but especially Jewish people, should have been outraged. And where's the Israeli government? They should have been outraged.
Yeah.
They have all these deals the Trump administration is helping them to accomplish their goal of driving the Palestinians to the sea. Did I ever tell your listeners the experience I had on a plane in 1988, I was flying from New York to Phoenix on a business trip on a wide-body jet, TWA. And we were allowed to walk around at that time. We were walking around the lounge area where they had drinks. And I was standing there talking to this guy. I was about 38, and he was maybe a couple years older than me. He was an Israeli engineer, and he was on a business trip to Phoenix. And we were talking, and I asked him a question about how do you feel about the Palestinian situation? And this is what the guy told me. And he was a nice guy, very well-spoken, very bright man. And he said to me, well, let me tell you. He said, we look upon the Palestinians like you look at the Southern blacks. He said they breed like rabbits. And if we're not careful, they're going to just totally overpopulate us. And we're going to be smothered by their numbers. And he said, sorry to say this, maybe it's not nice, but I'm being very truthful. He said, if we don't do something, we're going to have to drive them into the sea. To save Israel. That's what he said to me.
Right. And it's like, here are people who were just the victims of something like that, and they turn around and they have to do it to somebody else. I mean, what is it about with humans that if something happens to us, we have to do it to somebody else? And why can't we try to find out how to make it stop instead?
Yeah, you're right. It's a fact that I don't think it's human nature. I'm not going to go that far. There are a lot of Jewish people in Israel, and there's a newspaper, Haaretz, which is more left-wing than any paper here in the United States. And there's a very large peace movement in Israel.
Israeli Jews have a very big peace movement.
But the majority of the country is supporters of the Likud party. And even Labor now is not even a left-wing party. And they are opposed to what the Israeli peace movement is all about. They really believe in the biblical prophecies, all this baloney that the Christian Zionists have been peddling to them.
That's why the evangelical movement here, why his administration is filled with, I guess you call a lot of these people Zionists in his administration.
And they're very supportive of the Zionist movement in Israel to drive the Palestinians out. Let's be honest. Sad, right?
It is.
I mean, you're right. If you watch the movie, people watch the movie, I would have every Israeli who's a right-winger. I would force them to sit through Schindler's List again. watch Schindler's List again and just watch what was done by the occupying power to the people in Krakow, Poland.
The movie, that's what's supposed to take place. How could you justify treating people like this?
It's sick.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't know what to tell you, man. I cried when March 19th, 2003, I was watching that TV in the morning, and I saw the shock and awe, when I saw the film clips of the bombs, the missiles going into Baghdad, and the commentators on all the stations, no matter what they were, they were all like cheerleading.
Yeah.
The war with Iraq.
Yeah, there was chewing.
Right.
Yes, Katie Couric. Katie Couric was walking through the studios of NBC, and she was going,
Marines Rock!
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Marines Rock!
It's sick!
I know
it. It's like when the Germans invaded Poland
under false pretenses.
Hmm. I mean, the soldiers cheered.
But let me say this to you, and to people, who are listening to us.
Shire, the guy who wrote the Rise of the War, that was John Tolman, right?
Was that Shire?
Anyway, Shire was a correspondent in Berlin,
in the mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally asked to leave. The German government actually finally made him leave because he was too critical.
But he wrote that after they invaded Poland, when the soldiers were coming back,
and they had a certain amount of soldiers marching into Berlin
to supposedly cheers and to ceremonies,
he said that the majority of the Berlin public.
They just went to work that day.
They really almost disregarded the whole pomp and circumstance.
Because a lot of these people realized that this was stupid.
This is really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
To go and invade that country.
So not everyone is propaganda, Chuck.
Right. Yeah. I tell you, once these things get started, it's so hard to stop. I really wonder what the future holds, because there's so much momentum in this movement of hate.
Well, it's funny you said that because a lady I used to be a chauffeur for this woman.
I drove for her.
And one day she lived on Long Island. She lived in the biggest state.
She had this big house with a pond, like a lake pond.
And she had all kinds of horses and wildlife.
Not crazy, ducks and all kinds of stuff.
And she had three dogs.
And they're all different types.
And when I would go to pick her up,
The dogs would come out, they would jump all over you, they were very friendly dogs.
And one day I go to pick her up, and I hear her screaming.
She was calling me Mr. Phil.
So I ran through the house and had to go back into the back of the house.
And there was stalls for the horses.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a rooster.
She yells, come help me.
And I'm running back.
What's the matter?
And she goes, my dog is going to kill the rooster.
She's going to kill my rooster.
Stop them.
So I run into the three dogs had the rooster trapped
inside of a horse stall.
Right, and she wanted me to go and save the rooster.
And I couldn't, I wasn't into that.
I would have liked to have done it, but she ran in.
She pushed me aside and jumped in.
She jumped in and grabbed the rooster,
yelled at the dogs, and she
got the rooster out of there.
And I looked at the whole scene, you know.
And I said, Ann, what the hell is going on here?
And she goes,
After she calmed down, she goes, the dogs were packing.
She says, they were packing.
So I said, what do you mean packing?
She says, none of my three dogs, they're alone with the rooster, they never bothered the rooster, the rooster would sit on them.
But when they got together, the three of them, they formed a pack.
And they would have torn that rooster to shreds if they would have got that rooster.
She says it's called packing.
Huh.
Group psychosis, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Very interesting. That's exactly what happens with people. Wow.
Yeah.
That's why you see these films.
What was the movie about the lynching in the West? Famous movie where some guy is accused of doing the crime. And they form a lynch mob and they want to lynch the guy. They won't even let the sheriff take him into custody. They want to lynch the guy.
You know?
And that's what happens.
You're right. People form a pack, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really scary, isn't it?
It is.
Germany.
Well.
Germany during the 1930s.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
The Trump supporters.
Yeah.
No, I'm being honest. I'm not trying to be mean-spirited.
A lot of Trump supporters.
Yeah, I know there's a pack mentality there, too. Well, this has been a very interesting segment, and it went by really fast, and we're pretty much out of time. But thank you so much for joining me. Philip Ferrugio, it's the Empire, stupid.
Take care, Chuck.
Bye-bye. You too. Well, listeners, be sure to check out itsTheEmpireStupid.com. And there are a lot of good articles there, or columns there, by Phil. And he also interviews some very interesting people, and you can find the feed for that there as well. So once again, we are the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And got a station break coming up any time now, and I look forward to talking to you on the other side of that. Our next guest is going to be Richard Flamer, who operates the Catholic worker farm in Chiapas, Mexico, and he's always a great guest. So thank you all for being here with me tonight, and I hope you'll be back each and every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m.
through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness, malapropism, she leads a web of cosmic satiric cosmic conversation. Subjects can range from Norman the Goose next door to astrology and earth-changing and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on earth, plants, and astrology. Join Mohan and his guests on an adventure of feral hippies that touches earth green radio 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Rebel Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Our next guest of the evening, as I just mentioned, is Richard Flamer, and I'm going to call him now. He'll be joining us from Chiapas, Mexico. So we're calling him right now. I spoke briefly with Richard earlier, and
hello,
Richard. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Nuk Dimitris is calm, whose origin is hazy, but generally attributed to William Greenleaf Elliot, grandfather of T.S. Eliot.
Huh.
Little time now, and so much hasn't been put down as it should have been. But does it matter? It's all been written so well by my betters. And what they wrote has been my joy. Our little Catholic farm is named for the man called the first victim of Vatican II. The Casa de Mil Milagros was so named for the Colombian priest who ended up joining the first guerrilla movement in Colombia. Dorothy Day wrote an introduction to the collection of his writings, assembled by his brother. They're great essays, by the way. For eight years, they put back and forth between Guatemala and Chiapas, Mexico, taking pictures. Mostly I work Guatemala and refugees in camps in Mexico. But occasionally I come to the areas and back to Guatemala as the Civil War ran down. During the time, I worked with Bishop Samuel Ruiz and Cisco Flores Casas and Bishop Ricardo Flores Cobán, Guatemala. When the Civil War ended, I worked with Bishop Ruiz in setting up a community center in San Cristobal. The center called CSIRAC, which is an acronym for service to our people in CSIRAC, serves as a meeting place for various tribes in the region, who are often at war between themselves. Some of the conflicts date back over 500 years. Of the 14 indigenous groups in Chiapas, most of the languages are completely different from each other. No one group speaks to the others in the cities. The groups could meet in peace, Aristotle and I started first grade there. I started a communal carpentry shop school for young folks. A sewing group started, and eventually the Office of Habitat and Humanity was located there as well. After Aristotle and Mary left Seahawk, she'd organize and run a cooperative of older indigenous women who continued to make organic soaps, shampoos, oils, and traditional medicines. After we left Seahawk, we bought a small farm where we began to set up our carpentry shop, bringing the speed from my patriot and refugees out of Guatemala. One particular group of Chihuahua Indians had returned to their homeland since then, called Bambamfajos, where an NGO from Switzerland had built a school, meeting center, and rebuilt houses. The NGO helped build a building for a carpentry shop, but no tools were purchased. I started bringing tools from the U.S. down, initially for the shop at our farm, later for the shop in Bambamfajos. In Ilan, of course, was located in the only secondary school in the region. I started raising my money in the U.S. to start up money scholarships for Kuwaito, or a kind of advanced high school for the girls in the valley. The nearest Kuwaito is the capital, just over 7 hours by us. So the girls went on to a boarding school. Originally, my mom came from the diocese of Omaha, until the guys found that school was run by a lesbian couple. So I turned to my friends, got a couple of disabled veterans, and a high school buddy and a musician. Thus far, it's just seven girls, two of them have come back after graduation. One is now the bookkeeper for the community, while the other is teaching in the kindergarten. Additionally, one has gone to nursing school, and another is in university in her second year, of course, in public administration. The final three are continuing boarding school. Aristotle and I also worked on Oaxaca, mostly after the earthquake of September 9, 2017, having raised funds to rebuild five houses. Provided food and assistance for 20 families who live on the street where our parents reside. We provided doors and windows from our shop for four of our houses. Finally, we were prepared to put a stucco finish coat on four more houses. We will also be providing paint and some 10 buckets of 5 gallon each to paint. Our project work is about building community. Community without the aid of governments. We try to build community wherever we live. In Oaxaca, in Ilan, in our little community around the farm here. $1,800 a year pays for one girl to attend boarding school every year. The term for each year is from January to mid-December. I have one friend who attends in January for one of the students. His sponsor now for two years, will continue for two years. Elena Delfina, next nun, left her order for the releases in Chicago Venture Church hierarchy in Guatemala. As an indigenous woman, Guatemala, she's been finishing a master's degree and is starting a doctorate in theology at Jesuit University, Langamore. She is currently a teacher, former principal of a secondary school in Lombard, and is now reading works of liberation theology. Building community. As I've aged, I find that I need to consistently battle between my desires and my needs. Specifically, I can work 8 hours in the physical manner anymore. I need to think and work out what little I can do in limited time. and my waning abilities. Tell the community, as I've discovered, that they take them in the form. I can still raise funds for teaching young workers to go to school. I can still work with my neighbors and children growing food and vegetables for help and guide. I can still work on building teaching young workers. I can train older men to make furniture for extended families. I can provide a shop for concrete for the dreaming. I can work in the short areas of time with the spirit of the community to the world of listeners each month from Chiapas.
Well, I think it's great that you are finding new ways to still be probably just as useful as you always were, just in different ways.
No, I hope so. One of the problems I still have is aches and pains and problems with the results of aging and worms from the economy. So all these, they used to be little things, and now they're bigger things.
Yeah.
But that's the way life is, you know?
Yes.
I don't really mind it so much. What I mind most of all is my waning strength and the fact that I can't work eight hours a day anymore.
Yeah.
But when I was six hours, I suffered for the next 8 days afterwards.
Yeah. Let's see, one six-hour day and then two wasted ones is a lot less time than 3 4-hour days that didn't wear you out.
Yeah, well, I get excited.
I know, I do the same thing. But,
but the good news is that the days that I have to cover, I seem to read a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm getting through all those supper books that I read a long time ago and forgot how to read them. War and Peace. And a couple of books by Solzhenitsyn. Some essays by Osson and Mendelssohn. Has a great, terrific essay on Dante. So I get to read more Dante again. William Blake and all sorts of heady authors.
Yeah. It sounds like a very ambitious reader.
Well, actually, I've been reading since I was a child.
Oh, me too. I love reading. I think it might be the addiction that takes more of my time than any other one.
My dad challenged me when I went into the army. Told me that I would read anymore. So I used to get up at four instead of five. So I'd have an hour to myself to read. And Helen did that in Vietnam. He used to chuck my gas mask and some of the extra clothes, went around dirty, and had my books with me. So if you're reading an hour or two every day for a whole life, you get a lot done.
Yeah.
I hope life is treating you well.
Good, really don't have any complaints. I mean, there are always challenges, you know, all kinds of strange things going on in different aspects of my life, but it's all good. You just kind of deal with everything as it comes along and move on.
Yeah. There isn't any plan A.
Yeah. You know, we're down to a Z or double A by now.
Right. Chuck, it's always good to talk with you. And I hope you get the message of building a community wherever you are.
Yes, I love the theme of building community wherever you go. And if we would all work toward that, I think what a better place this world would be.
I hope so. Talk to you next month.
Okay. Thank you so much, Richard.
You
really
be
been
that.
A pleasure.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Richard Flamer, quite a guy. Well, earlier today, I spoke with Frank Cordero of the Des Moines Catholic Worker, and I'm going to play that recording right about now. So here we go.
Yo.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
I feel like Job.
What?
Let me explain. Monday, we were going to have a direct action thing at the State House. The Black Lives Matter folks.
And it
was pulled off because of this horrendous storm that came into the town.
Huh.
And came into the state.
Yeah.
So hundreds of thousands of people are without power. 70,000 to 60,000 in Des Moines area continue to do not have power.
Wow.
And we had to call that demo off. And when I went home with Norman, we had lost power in all four houses.
Wow.
And on no internet.
Huh.
And we have a live wire, live power wire in our yard.
Ooh.
And we call the people and we tell them this, and they tell us this. There's a lot of live wires all over the town.
Huh.
Stay away from them, and we'll get to them as soon as possible.
Wow.
And they're maintaining that they will have it done for most people in Des Moines by Saturday. That's from Monday to Saturday. So we've been hustling. So we had to find a place for the frozen meat.
Yeah.
And one of the priests, a close friend of mine, Father Monsignor Ashido,
uh-huh,
let us use my home parish, St. Anthony's grade school's freezer for our freezer meat. So that was saved. It's just been one fiasco after another, trying to cook. We had to keep we weren't open on Tuesday, but we plan on being open tonight, and they're doing it because they pulled out some meat that they were going to use, and we got enough food without power till Saturday.
Huh.
And after that, we're not sure how we're going to operate. So I've infringed on friends to get to internet. I feel like Job today because I went to one of my friends early in the morning, went to his place, promised me I could use it. I got there and he couldn't find his number, the password to get in. Then I went to another friend who was up and running. I went to his house, just started getting in, got it, and then the power went out. Now I'm at my brother Joe's, and it's a nice, cool place, and it's working. I hope I don't bring a curse on his house. Joe's telling me, don't bring on, mention it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, really. don't jinx it.
So that's the situation here. But prior to the weather calamities, we did have our witness out at the base. It was a long 3.5 days.
Uh-huh.
I wrote up a report about it, and I'd like to read just the a portion of it that was like the biggest surprise during the retreat.
Okay.
Was meeting this kid, Tobias. It was Saturday night. It was our last night of the vigil. The sun had gone down. Eddie and I were in our yard chairs, recovering from the hot winds and sun of the day of vigiling. And down the road, walking towards us, came Tobias, a young man in his 20s. He sat down and proceeded to have a long conversation in the cool winds of the early evening. Tobias had just become a Catholic. He told us he heard of Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker Movement and was interested in volunteering. Both Eddie and I perked up. Tobias told us he used to be a social worker. He had his BA in psychology. He went on to, he wants to move up in the social worker world, but needs a master's degree. He could not pay for the grad school with his minimum wage job in social work, so he learned how to work with computers and now works at Mediacom, hoping to get a master's degree with the extra money he now has. So then I asked Tobias, how did you learn to work with computers? And he told us with a big smile on his face, I joined the National Guard. This changed everything. Wow. We came to find out that Tobias was 1 month away from being deployed to Kosovo for a year on a NATO mission. Whoa. He was very much aware of the Catholic Church's teachings on war and peace, and he could not see himself killing another person. After spending a couple hours talking on a wide range of issues, I got to know Tobias better, and he us. I believe Tobias is a conscientious objector in his heart already, and now needs to act on it. I told him when he got to Kosovo, find the people doing the works of mercy. I also told him to continue his journey following his heart and act on his convictions. I look forward to staying connected with Tobias. What a gift. And I got a response from him because I put it out on our, I didn't give his last name, but he's on the same email list. And he said, you guys were a gift to me too. So I count that as really a big plus. That we don't have many Catholic conscience objectors these days. And that I blame the bishops and the, leadership of our church that has allowed that to happen. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's been quite a week, and it's not over with yet. I go back to home, and there's no electricity. We have one line, as I said. Our neighbor gave it to us, and at night I use it for light, and no fans, so we're sleeping on the porch.
Huh.
Things are getting stinky just by just being, you know, just the way it is.
Yeah.
And they tell us Saturday we'll have some electricity. We'll see.
Wow. Well, you know, I didn't even know all this was happening, Frank. You know, that's how the news is in the United States of America. We don't hear about things that aren't in our backyard.
You know, I don't know what to say. It's a big country, and weather's big, and tornadoes are not tornadoes, monsoons and stuff along the coast always get a big play because that's where the population base is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
They can flatten us here, and who knows?
Well,
who knows, Chuck?
Well, I'm sure if it, really. I'm sure if it costs some. Big corporation, a lot of money, it'd be in the news, but, yeah.
Well, I think this energy con, these are Iowa things, they got this, you know, emergency thing, so people are coming in from out of state to come and help them put up the infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's like so, what happens.
They're just overwhelmed, that's all it is, they're just overwhelmed.
When we have, when we have a hurricane down here or something and power goes out all over
there's people come in from all over. I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing to see all these people from other states, you know, coming in to pitch in.
The problem is the weather's getting more and more severe, and it's getting to be the new normal.
Yeah.
And we have not invested in a long-term infrastructure that will weather the weather, and that is a time bomb.
Yeah,
crazy. We're pissing away what we ought to be doing.
Indeed. Well, here's my end of the story. Last Thursday, I was just starting the second half hour of the show when my internet went out.
And oh, bummer.
I ended up having to cancel the whole rest of the show. So your interview from last week didn't actually go out live. When I put it up in the archives, I'm going to kind of reconstruct what was supposed to be on there. But, so I'll put it on there that way.
Thanks. But, I love the archives. I like listening to the show second time. It's kind of fun.
I don't know if you saw, there's a couple more that went up over the last week. So you might check.
Well, you know, I've been kind of busy, you know. I've been plagued here by
You haven't had any internet either.
And then we also got the winds and the storms and and the down electrical thing. I think I feel like Job. I really do. It's me.
All right, Frank. Hang in there. I hope you get some power back soon. And let me know if there's anything I can do. So.
Thank you, brother. God bless.
All right. God
Bye-bye.
Bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So that half hour segment was our Catholic Worker segment tonight with Richard Flamer and then Frank Cordero joining us from Chiapas, Mexico and Des Moines, Iowa. I have to wonder which one of those is the foreign country to most of us. That's a deep thought. Anyway, thank you all for joining me right here on Revolution Radio at freedomflips.com for the New American Dream radio show. And we have one more segment coming up after the station break. See you then.
Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
Your head's in the sand, your tail is a target. She travels to Earth through rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space.
space and time, across the dimensions, the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Supermastery of abstract, stream of consciousness, a web of cosmic material, cosmic conversation, subjects ranging from Norman the Goose Network to astrology and her changes, and into the deep set of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on Earth's planet and astrology. Join Leonard at the Astronaut Adventure Fair at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
We did not engage in conflict. This was out of line on mission. I will never send troops anywhere without telling them that somebody shoots them. They can well shoot back.
We are the Revolution Radio, where every Monday, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, we bring the latest in suing takedown of the global empire. You'll get the raw hard truth here on Tipping Point. Come join us Monday, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, in Studio B at Revolution.radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And we have one more guest for your enjoyment tonight, Thomas Workman. Thomas runs the MUFON in Northern Ohio. That's Mutual UFO Network. And he always has something interesting to tell us about what's going on with UFO research.
Hello.
Hello, Thomas. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great.
Well, since the last time I was on, Chuck, I got a few questions from people. And they kept telling me that the number of cases or UFO sightings going up. And I pulled some numbers from the state I'm in, which is Ohio. And the numbers this year are kind of comparable to last year. Well, I thought, let's just stop there. Let's go back and look at some other areas, because one of the individuals that I know he posted a report that says UFO reports in Canada are up 50% this year as compared to last year. So I thought, let's go ahead and check the United States as a whole and kind of back that too. And just because, I mean, if you think of Canada alone, maybe there's something unique about something going on in Canada as compared to someplace else. So I was going to go back and compare the United States. Well, when I pulled the numbers up, He was saying, and the numbers I got is from Chris Witkowski, who's a UFO researcher and an investigator in Canada. Well, Witkowski said that last year, in 2019, there were 849 reports he had in Canada. Well, I want to go back and just verify those numbers just for curiosity. So what I did is I went into our MUFON database. And I pulled up the numbers and showed that last year MUFON reported 399 cases as compared to 849 mentioned. Well, the thing is, he mentioned in his article that I was reading over. He also looked at private databases, which could be something specific to Canada itself. Also, there's a National UFO Reporting Center, which is an international database. So I started looking at real quick to see if you might have pulled those numbers in. And it's difficult because of the way that the system is set up. So what he did is just kind of focused only on MUFON itself. In 2019, like I said, there's 299 in Canada. This year, now remember, it's only January to August, basically. We've got 337, which is getting close to the number already for last year in Canada. But when I looked at January to August this year as compared to last year, January to August, there was 237 cases in Canada. This year, 337. So his 50% increase is pretty much right on the money. When the United States said, let's look at the U.S. just for comparison. In the U.S. last year, MUFON had 5,469 cases. This year, we're at 4,236. And comparing last year from January to August, last year there was 3,074 cases. This year 4,236. We're already at that 50% increase also. So there's definitely a lot more reports coming in. And I didn't realize that one increase, but the big question is why? I mean, think about it. Sports right now, a lot of people aren't watching sporting events. I mean, baseball season, you see pictures of people sitting in the stands, but you don't see pictures of people themselves. College football, as the announcement came out yesterday, is going to be pretty much nicked for most divisions this year. So that's going to limit reports coming in, maybe people being out outside events like that. Well, people are finding other alternatives to get out. And I'm just wondering if some of those reports are coming from those different activities. The other day I went out to try to buy a bicycle and couldn't find a bicycle in a lot of bicycle stores. Because people are buying bicycles and bicycling as activities. If you drive around the park, you see a lot of people riding bicycles in parkways. Other activities I didn't really think about that much, but we'd get UFO reports coming from people out saying, hey, I was out fishing and saw all these unusual lights. Well, one of my friends called me up, kind of into UFOs, and he goes, I want to buy fishing gear. And he says, I was amazed how many fishing gear stores didn't have fishing gear because people are buying it and taking it up because there's a lot of other activities you can't do. And maybe beyond something there. So we may have more reports coming in from people riding bicycles, going out fishing. And MUFON, I know when I look over some of our reports, You've got people out walking their dogs and doing other activities. That we don't always see in the past. So that may be accounting for the increase in people doing other activities, maybe they've got more time to look at the sky and so forth. Well, in the cases coming out of Canada, I just wondered, if there's a 50% increase, how many cases are really falling into category of being unknowns? Now, according to Chris Richthouse, he says about 3% of what they're getting remain unknown. That means that people are seeing something like airplanes, stars, fireballs, things along those lines. And when I pull up cases in the United States, it's the same type of thing. We're getting a lot of reports now of people sighting things, they're seeing things in the sky. They take videos of it, they get information. And a number of things I've been finding out recently is there's a lot more airplane sightings that people are reporting. When they send me the video, I've got a video of what they see. When you magnify it, sometimes it's pretty bad, but at times I can make out where the wind should be on the aircraft. But one of the things I do as a researcher is I like to go in and say, okay, let's just don't assume that maybe it's an aircraft. Let's see if we can prove it. And this is where some advantages of technology are right now. What I do is I go in and look at transponder signals from aircraft in the region at the same time frame that they had a sighting. I've got access to the transponder signals, so if they're from, say, where I'm at in Ohio, I go back and I can pull up a time frame and see if there's any aircraft in the region. Something else I love about advances of technology. I can go back and take that information and put it into what's called a spreadsheet, which displays all the coordinates of all the locations that plane reported the signal in at during its flight. That signal contains the longitude, the latitude, and even the altitude that they're at, airspeed, et cetera, time and date exactly. Another way of kind of, you know, help kind of prove in this case what I'm looking at is I can lay that into a program called Google Earth, which a lot of people may have used. It's good to kind of go and browse Google Earth at times to go out and see different locations around the country. Well, I'll import that information into Google Earth, and I can see a course where that airplane is flying right across, like in this case, my region of the United States. And the other day is just a little experiment. I placed myself where the witness was at, not just on the ground, but looking in the direction where they saw their object. And even angling the camera up, the Google Earth utilizes this photograph where the people are. And I took the background away, which means you eliminate the picture image in the background. And I could see that aircraft that I overlaid into Google Earth exactly where the witness saw the UFO at, which really kind of helps confirm what the witness was really seeing. And it's just amazing what you can do with technology like that. Well, when I go back and look at some of the things that the Canadian numbers are saying, 3%, Is that really kind of accurate? I think there may be some more unknowns to that. Well, one of the things I noticed when I pulled information from MUFON is there was roughly about 3% of the cases marked being unknown. Now, what MUFON is when an object or sighting is really considered unknown. What they do is they go in, the case is reviewed by investigators. They go back and look to see if there's a possible explanation for what the witness has seen. Well, in this case, they go in an unknown aerial vehicle, which means they've seen some sort of what appears to be a solid object. Something like almost like an aircraft, but we just don't know what that thing is. It can also be considered unknown other. And in this case, it could be because of light, we just don't have any physical information about the thing other than we just source light or orb in the sky. That's one category of unknowns. And when Canada's reporting about 3% unknowns, that's kind of like what they're looking at. It could be a physical object, or it could be some sort of light source just not identified. But what I noticed is there's a number of cases coming out of Canada that were considered what they call insufficient data. Now, these may also add some of those numbers about the unknowns. When insufficient data is reported, that means investigators tried to reach out by a couple different means, like either email or phone. They've been unsuccessful trying to reach them by those types of communication. And when they review the case, there's not enough information in the report to really go into. I've had witnesses turn reports in that I've reviewed where the witness number one may not want to give their name. And at times I can understand why they don't want to give a name because What if you happen to be some sort of a personality? Or let's say somebody who is a professional. I've had some who were college professors that have turned to reports and they wouldn't want their name to get public to say UFO because it may not look good. I mean, picture an airline pilot from a commercial airline that gets out to see UFOs and they may not look at that very highly. So sometimes the report doesn't have a name in it. Other times, report comes in. There's absolutely no location where they're at in the country. Now, the country last time I looked at it was kind of fairly sizable under Chuck. And they say, I saw this. But they don't tell you where. And at times I've been able to reach a witness, and they said, well, I just didn't want to tell you where it was at. Because there's a man in black looking for me. And I have to think, man in black looking for you. Well, if you just see a light in the sky from this way or not, maybe some distance. I don't think they have to worry about that much. But again, it kind of hurts doing investigations. The other thing is not being specific on time, date, dates. They don't give information regarding time and date. They just say, hey, I saw it sometime, maybe 2018, maybe 2017. Well, again, it doesn't really help us do an investigation. So at that point, investigators say may not have been able to contact the witness. And there wasn't information in that report to even base any sort of investigation on it. And that case is classified as initiated data. The problem I saw was about 30% of the cases coming out of Canada were insufficient data at that point. Now, if we had more information on those cases, maybe those unknown numbers have gone up. You've got other types of cases which goes at that 97%. It goes back to information only. A witness saw something in this case on YouTube, not gotten by the way. I've got cases where an individual saw something unusual on a YouTube video and said, hey, I want you to make aware of this, and maybe somebody should check it out. Now you get some good reports, but you'll get some other ones to check. I had one come in that I couldn't believe. The individual sent a report in and said, I see monkeys on the moon. I'm thinking, monkeys on the moon? And he goes, yeah. And I had a feeling where he got his information from. Well, what I did is I drove out to the individual's house. And what really got me to check is the house that was in was easily about a $700,000 house. I mean, beautiful house, new house made in the last few years, like, wow, this is impressive. And I go in, it wasn't his house, it was actually his father's house. But nonetheless, your family evidently very well to do. And he goes, I'm going to show you some videos I've got. And he shows me these videos on YouTube. And he goes, look. And he's showing the launch of the lunar lander lifting off of one of the Apollo launches. And in the dust storm, you see these monkey faces appearing. And he looks at me and goes, see? There's monkeys on the moon. And I said, well, where's the source of this video coming from? And he goes, I don't know, but there's monkeys on the moon. I said, you realize that the moon is a vacuum, right? And if there's no air, the monkey can't breathe. And this is what got scared. He goes, really? I didn't know that. And I said, you mean you didn't know that? There was no atmosphere on the moon, the monkeys can't breathe? No. Well, I tried to explain to him, I think his video, that he may have been cautious about taking it for granted, but I said, I think maybe what you see is a little CGI where people are doing graphics ratings. Well, he accepted what I said, and I was glad he did, because it's just one of the most unusual cases I've ever worked. You can have people seeing something and say, hey, why don't you somebody look at this? Now, I'm not saying things can't be found like that, it's unusual. But in this case, this one just kind of really stood out. Well, in that category of information only, there weren't a whole lot of those. But it's just basically we're storing that information in a database for saving that information for potential future use. You can also have individuals focusing things. We're seeing, I think, a rise on misinterpretation of drones right now. People flying drones around, people checking fireworks with drones. And I don't know where you're at, but I have people shooting fireworks two and three in the morning, I think, because they're bored. Well, sometimes cases come in, and I had one the other day where an individual saw a flash outside of his window. But lasted for a couple seconds and turned into a UFO report. Now, it's not possible somebody's shooting fireworks, but this is a case that didn't have enough information on. You've also got part of that 96%, 97%. It could be hoaxes completely by somebody typing up a phony report and making something up. One of the things I've done out of a background being in education for 30 some years, is I kind of look for things like plagiarism where an individual took a story somebody else had. And turned it into a report. And on occasion, I've taken what the witness typed out, took exactly their words that they typed out verbatim, pasted it into a program and looked for plagiarism on the internet. And I found out that they copied basically a story from some article that I read. interns report just to kind of see what response they get. But overall, I mean, you still have 3% in this case saying is unknown to Canada, which may be higher. But we've got a 50% increase of what we had over last year. Again, part of it may be more people are outside, more people are boating, fishing, and so forth. But another thing that may be accounting for it is more shows coming out recently. On television, also more information available on the Internet for UFO research and just entertainment. There's a number of shows up right now on television. And some of those are basically almost like the priming people to think that hey, maybe they're going to release a lot more information shortly from the government. And that may be so, and I think people are getting interested in that. Because we've had a lot more reports about the government knowing much more about UFOs, which we talked about on your show in the past, than what David admitted. And it appears that now the government has set up that program. The program has been put into use, and what they're doing is they're looking at UFO reports, which they call UAP reports, coming in from the military. They're also looking at UFO reports coming in from police. And other areas in which these reports can be filed with government agencies. And I haven't seen it yet. But I've heard there's roughly about 300-page report now. It's been created. And I don't know how much we're going to see, but it's been reported by that agency. They're supposed to be doing this roughly about every six months. So in response to my friend backing up a little bit, they were right. The number of cases are up 50%. We don't know exactly why the number of cases is up 50%. You can make assumptions that in this case it could be due to People out fishing, boating, et cetera, more outside than it used to be. Also, maybe more people are getting interested in subject to television shows being on. But there also could be something else happening. One of the things that I haven't looked specifically for certain regions, but when the government was creating new aircraft, one of the things I didn't really think they did is I didn't think they flew Some of these experimental aircraft over different regions of the country populated. If you think about it, somebody flying an experimental aircraft over Los Angeles or some area like that, and wouldn't necessarily expect that. But there's been comments made by individuals involved with those projects that had been done. When some of these experimental aircraft were run, for example. The F-117, the stealth, the B-2 stealth. When some of these aircraft were developed, they got to a certain point, they said, we want to see if, number one, they're being picked up on, let's say, commercial air radar systems. We want to see that people are able to observe these things from the ground. I mean, what better way to test it out to see if people can see these things and pick up on them and fly them over populated areas. Because if you think about it, if you're going to take these things over and over, at least you want to see if there are avenues for seeing these things before you put them out there. Well, he said they've been doing that. They've been flying these things over various regions. And occasionally people would report seeing something in the sky that was unusual. And the report would come in. That gave more feedback than just flying them out in some populated area, like, for example, Area 51. So some people that are seeing these unusual things could be seeing potentially military flights that are over a populated area. And it could include also people seeing drones flying over these populated areas. So that also could account for the increase. But that's one of the big things I looked at within the last couple weeks. And we'll just have to see what the rest of the year brings out. If those numbers hold true and go through the rest of the year. So that's the big thing on there for Chuck.
Well, some very interesting analysis there, Tom. Thank you so much for that. It's interesting, you know, are there really more somethings out there, or is it the sightings? You've come up with a lot of good possibilities.
Yeah, and that's the thing we just don't know. I mean, the thing that you run into is, there's so many sightings coming in from across the country, and you're getting thousands of sightings coming in. Each one of those is essentially unique. And identifying the exact source, you'd have to go out and really talk to not just all the witnesses, but really spend a lot of time saying, what do you do as a hobby? You know, when you saw it, what were you doing? What made you more aware of looking for something potentially like UFO? Now, on the one hand, you also get individuals who, for some reason, I think, may go back to watching UFO shows. They're aware of the subject, and when they see something, they automatically turn it in as a UFO report because they may not know who else to go to. I've had people sending me pictures from trail cameras, and they say, check this picture out, the trail camera, seeing something unusual in it. And by the way, we're also getting stuff coming in, not necessarily. A UFO in the sky. It could be something like a creature being reported. Now, this didn't come in a trail camera. I'm just changing subjects here real quick because I thought about it. But I had a witness in our state, Southern Ohio, report seeing something running across the road in front of their car. Now, what was unusual about it was it was about seven feet tall, he said. And the legs weren't hinged like a human leg. They're actually backwards. And it was moving extremely fast. Now I'm thinking, why would you submit this report to Mercury? I think it's an alien. And it's an alien running across the highway. Well, we sent investigators out, and they looked for footprints, tracks, which they didn't find. And they were looking for all the sources to explain it. Now, what ended up happening is we found out the individual turned to report it. One of those individuals actually was writing about unusual creatures. And it made me wonder if the person wasn't just planning to turn reports and getting media to help build a sales book. But on the other hand, here is something else that popped up I saw today. That was along the line of what my explanation may have been. I said, what if somebody saw an ostrich? I said, what direction did the ostrich's legs bend? Backwards.
Yeah.
And they're tall.
Thank you so much. We've run out of time, but thanks so much. And listeners, thank you for being with me on the New American Dream Radio Show. Come back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.